Dieter and Hutch, Tuesday morning. 49ers playing on Thursday night, so weird week. Looking forward to the game on Thursday, only because, well, what else is there to do? You know, you got to look forward to the game on Thursday. But Jake, Robert Saleh getting fired this morning in New Jersey. I appropriately named where the team is.
Thank you.
And
Florham Park.
And Niners fans have lost their goddamn minds. They're just completely unhinged. This is not a new development, but it is an insightful one in that there is now plenty of suggestion from the terminally online that the Niners fire Nick Sorensen and hire Robert Saleh to be defensive coordinator midseason. This would be their their October 8th, I guess, would be their situation. They want to stage a coup. I thought we already had a shadow defensive coordinator in San Francisco. Apparently there was one operating in the deeper shadows than that in Florham Park, New Jersey. I just want to get this off my chest, then I want to have you talk me down and talk some sense into some people. But you're five games into the season. Clearly, team bad fire coordinator is a tale as old as time, and it is not consistently unjustified, right? Like, sometimes coordinators suck. Steve Wilks sucked last year. Did we know after five games that Steve Wilks sucked? No. In fact, I think a lot of people didn't figure out that Steve Wilks sucked until the Super Bowl when they lost. But it was pretty clear.
When we were basically told explicitly by the team, they're like, yeah, he's bad, before the Super Bowl started.
Yes. So it came to a head there, but the signs were pretty clear that Steve Wilks, one, had a bad scheme for the players on the team, and then two, refused to adjust that scheme as the season progressed and just did more and more basic stuff. And the Niners defense got more and more exploited by competent offensive coordinators. The idea that there's competency across the board of the offensive coordinator is a joke, as the New York Jets can attest to. And the idea that there's more than, like, I don't know, 5-10 good defensive coordinators in this league, of which there's like 3 or 4 really great ones, is also a joke. So I can understand some trepidation and some fear and some economic anxiety from 49ers fans thinking, oh, do we have a good one? Because Robert Saleh, in theory, and I suppose in practice, when he had better personnel here in San Francisco, was a good one. DeMeco Ryans was also a good one. He had very good personnel as well. I just, to say that five games in, Nick Sorensen is the problem is just woeful. It's a woeful performance by Niners fans and anyone who wants to entertain this notion as reasonable. I'm not saying Sorensen's good. I'm saying I don't know, because you have a team without a free safety. You have a team without a weak side linebacker that's any good. And you have a team with crazy defensive line issues. And oh yeah, your number one corner has been butthole all year. I don't know how that's Nick Sorensen's fault. It is his problem that he has to fix. But I don't know how that's Nick Sorensen's fault. And I don't know how anybody can point to anything that the Niners have done on defense and say, this team is poorly coordinated. It's just too early. Also, Robert Saleh has 7 kids, just got paid a ton of money, and will be a defensive coordinator wherever he wants next year. I'm sure he'll join the team mid-season. What the fuck are we doing here?
He's going to chill out. He's got a big family. He got kind of the dream of being like, well, not the dream, because like that was actually a good Jets roster. It wasn't going to do anything, but at least in my opinion, I don't think they're going to do anything. It's like, and the fact that it wasn't even Rodgers, as it was like presupposed, it's like Woody Johnson just losing his mind, because it's like Eric Mangini was like, oh, it's because he lost in London where all of his old friends are.
Yeah, because he was the ambassador. By the way, on the release on the Jets website, they called him ambassador. It's a great operation. He's really, really good at that job.
It reeks of what the Jets are, which is a mess, as always.
Right.
I know it as well as anyone. Like, you can still be competitive at times if you're a mess, but like sustained success and like relying on an organization to consistently make the right decisions, it's hard. And someone at the top is just a ball of chaos. And it was funny because like they were able to put stuff in place while he was Ambassador Johnson. When his brother took over, that was like a little more, oh, they're moving in the right direction. Then he comes back and You know, but yeah, I didn't get through the entire game on the all 22 just because yesterday was a nightmare.
This is the Niners game.
Yeah. So just switching back to Sorensen now. And in contrast to what the Cardinals were running, I will say, like, did look pretty rough from the Niners end. Like, it was pretty basic. There's a lot of separation by the Cardinals. The Niners, I will give Jonathan Gannon a lot of credit. You go back and watch that, and he looked like he knew exactly, like, what the Niners were going to run, what the route concepts were, where basically, like, what cues to give the safeties to say, read it this way and stay here to cut off this route, and then it's going to move that way.
Yeah.
And Purdy looked pretty frazzled. Like, even going to the second red zone opportunity they had, where if he had come off something earlier, the Cardinals locked down the entire right side and Purdy stuck on it too long. And by the time he came back, there's pressure in his face and he missed two open windows on the left side because he didn't come off of it. And they had Purdy feeling it. So, in contrast,
that's the gambit,
to that,
though, right? Like, that's the Kansas City model. Like, we're going to play man to man. We're going to force you to beat us man to man. You are a timing offense. We're going to knock you off your timing. And yes, we will leave ourselves susceptible to guys who can win in man-to-man, i.e. Brandon Ayuk, but we are the bet is that your offensive line is not good enough to allow Brock Purdy, who also, you know, maybe jumps out of the pocket a little too fast, maybe doesn't stand in there as long as he should, maybe he's a little bit too scampery. Yep. They're making the bet that he won't see it or he won't do it. And so far, Minnesota has made that bet, and I think the Patriots have made that bet, and the Rams made that bet, and then the Cardinals did it and just went all in, right? They could have lost that game 40-0 with the exact same game plan.
Yep.
It was a boom or bust situation, and it really pans out, especially late in games, when Brock knows he can't turn the ball over, so he doesn't take risks throwing the ball, which he shouldn't. But when your entire offense is basically boom or bust, I think that's a basic predication on risk, right? You have to be able to take the big chunk plays when they're given to you, which they're an opportunity, I would argue, is on every snap. And yet he doesn't want to do it because of the risk there, especially against good safeties like Arizona had. But, you know, when it's New England and they suck, it doesn't matter.
And I think what you were saying, like, personnel, that's the thing of, like, people trying to can Sorensen, like, is it going to make things better to bring in Saleh, who hasn't been with any of these guys,
why are we, like, pretending as if Robert Saleh one would take the job? If they want to fire Nick Sorensen, guess who your defensive coordinator is? The same guy who it's always been, Brandon Staley. Like, there's the concept that someone is going to bring in Robert Saleh mid-season, like he's Matt Patricia, by the way, worked out great last year for the Eagles. Like, is ludicrous.
He's doing great with Bill Belichick's podcast.
Well, he's on the Zempic, and he looks good. And honestly, I said earlier this season, I'm a little Belichicked out. I don't need this much Bill in my life. Like, why do you need 7 media jobs? Go spend time with your 20-something-year-old girlfriend, buddy. Like, you know, take a walk, get off the internet. But I'll say this. I've tuned into the Coach podcast. Pretty good. It's pretty good. And Patricia's good actually pretty good on it. So credit where it's due.
Yep.
They didn't know their true calling was the media game. Instead, they were just winning Super Bowls for the Patriots and then embarrassing themselves and never getting another decent job with the Lions again. Or Eagles, because they made him the offensive coordinator, defensive coach. Nick Sirianni's really got this figured out. I think...
Good stuff.
I'm not saying, again, that I know if Sorensen is good or not. I really don't.
Yeah.
I haven't seen anything that has made me go, what are you calling? Like, what are you doing? Like, mix it up. It doesn't feel as if the Niners are losing because of the chess match. It feels that the Niners are losing because they don't have but pawns on the board and the other team's playing with queens and rooks and knights. And
they're also making some coverage mistakes where it's like the call might be right. And so you could say, okay, that is on Sorensen if they are mixing up the coverages, but it's also like, I don't know. You got some players who've been doing this for a while. Like, get it right. Like that one play where
I talked about it Ward on Sunday. The Ward and Ward and Lenore.
Ward and Lenore dropped like 10 yards.
Yeah.
Both of them. I don't know what that was. I don't know who's. I genuinely don't know whose assignment it was. But then Michael Wilson just stops and runs like.
I guess I'll take your 320 yards.
Easiest third and seven conversion. They both just like backpedaled like 10, 15 yards. And it was like, all right, take the first down, I guess.
And that very well could be Sorensen's fault, but probably not. He probably didn't instruct both guys to do the same thing. And okay, in the term of coordination, there has to be communication. There has, you know, maybe the communication came through. Maybe it's Fred's fault. Maybe, you know, he has the green dot. He's the one relaying the plays. Maybe he gave it out wrong. There are plenty of points of failure there. And it's, again, not to insulate Nick Sorensen from criticism. It's merely to say the idea that anyone can know after five games if this guy's good at it or not is ridiculous. And I'll say this full stop.
Yeah.
I don't think Kyle Shanahan knows yet. I don't think the players know yet if this guy's good or not. And I think that it would start to leak out as much as the Niners keep a pretty tight lid on things. I think it would start to leak out pretty quickly, just like it did with Wilkes last year. Hey, there's some discontent. There's some unhappiness. And, oh, we'd start hearing a lot more about Brandon Staley from national media guys. You know, we'd be hearing, oh, like Brandon Staley's trying this. Or like, we're going to, you know, Brandon Staley's really involved in this or that. I just think it's, here's a new toy, which we're familiar with, a thing that can happen. And it's all become very NBA reactionary with the 49ers fan base right now. And I understand where the anxiety comes from, that you want to change, you want something to happen. But, you know, on Monday it was, we got to fire Kyle. And now it's, oh, you got to fire the defensive coordinator. And, oh, next week it will be actually Purdy's not good. And then the week after that, they'll go back to Kyle. Like, what are we
folks, here's the harsh reality of life. It's bleak. It's long. It's painful.
This is life, Jake's nihilist corner.
Life beats you up. And, you know, sometimes change is slow. And sometimes things just go wrong. And you have to live with it for a while. And I'm not saying that 49ers should be averse to making changes that would help them, because that's stupid. But it's not clear what they need to change or if they need to change with their coordinator. We're five games in. I know it's 2024 and all of our attention spans have been burnt to a crisp by the algorithm, and we all have no patience collectively. Again, I'm saying all of us.
Well, I'll say them more so, because at least I'm actively fighting it.
Right. Delete most of the social media apps, at least off all your phone, telling you, helps a lot. But I'm saying it's tough. Our attention spans, we want things to happen now, because our brains are like, if it doesn't happen now, it doesn't matter to me. I get it. That said, I don't think that's a rational approach. I don't think there's any proof of what Sorensen is or isn't at this point. And I think you just have to have patience. And if they lose on Thursday and the defense looks like an absolute disaster, and the 49ers now 0-3 in the division and 2-4 with the Chiefs and the Cowboys coming up, all right, I'll listen to that a little bit more.
Fair
but
play.
It's five games in. We don't know. Personnel's been a mess. Been injuries. I just have a hard time thinking that's the clear answer. To me, when I watched that tape again with the All-22, again, I didn't get through all of it, but like first half, I see Brandon Ayuk mostly separating against one-on-one. I see them helping with a safety whenever Kittle's like actually running a route and not just like late releasing. And then Debo is not separating an inch. Juwan Jennings, when he gets like a third down, like choice route, like he's winning those, but like, he's not really like winning most of his routes. And so that's why he's like always catching contested balls, because he's not really like separating. Like, he's a great player and I love Juwan Jennings, but in terms of like clear separation where Brock can say, all right, I'm throwing the ball to him, it's a 50-50 ball pretty much every time. And then Mason's not winning. So you basically, you kind of have two eligible receivers in Kittle and Ayuk, and one of them is taken out of the play. And so you've got like one receiver, if that, and if Purdy chooses the wrong side of the field, he's got to come off of it immediately and look back to the other side. And he either can't do it or doesn't have the time to do it. That's what I'm seeing is the main problem. And also, they blocked like shit in the run
game.
Like, especially in the first half. Like, they're
the beauty of man-to-man if you're Arizona is that you can sell out against the run, right? Because you have single man on the outside, and like you can commit one safety, if not two, to the run game every time. And the Niners, this is something that I wrote yesterday, the four biggest issues and their solutions, to the best of my knowledge, and we've talked about pretty much all of them to this point. Like this is not new territory that we're trudging, but there is something that I do think we haven't talked about yet that I want to get your take on. The Niners are almost an exclusively shotgun team now, and that takes away the outside stretch play action with Mason and turns it into some Big 12 shit, which, again, I think I understand why Kyle wants to do that, and I know why Brock wants that. He feels more comfortable surveying the field from that position, not turning his back to the defense. Who would feel comfortable turning their back to a defense, especially with this line? But the threat of play action not being as present anymore, unless you want to run a true read option the way Arizona did this past week, like that, not having that true outside zone play action threat on a consistent basis removes a level of conflict for the defense. And now the conflict is almost exclusively on player movement pre-snap, if that, because you're not really even doing that as much anymore. It's really just Debo. And that's it. Those are Kittle blocking versus going out on a route. Like, there's not any real conflict going on here. So what you have is a situation where Kyle Shanahan, offensive play caller, the only time that it feels like he's doing anything innovative is when he is drawing stuff up Ben Johnson style, which is, you know, a cool play that, you know, it's just a cool play. It's not inherently conflicting for a defense, which is what Shanahan has built his entire career around. And I just wonder if this team needs to go under center more in order to get back that element, because that element was created in a time and in place and an era and is tried and true, but it goes back to just having a true running back. And when you have Christian McCaffrey, you don't have to do that shit, but you have a true running back now. So I think you do.
Where would you guess Purdy ranks in terms of play action percentage out of 32 NFL quarterbacks?
18th.
Fourth to last.
That's incredible.
28th. Only Jacoby Brissett, Kirk Cousins, and Geno Smith are below him. And that's something.
Now you're asking Kyle, who's a run game guy, to come up with really cool play structures. And oh, by the way, you lost Bobby Slowick, who was the guy who did that for Kyle. He was the guy who drew up the cool routes on plays.
Right. Also, like that first game of the season where they ran the hell out of the ball, they were running like two tight ends and had a single back quite a bit.
That's what Kansas City did yesterday. Kansas City didn't have any wide receivers, so they just went to heavy personnel because Andy Reid's a pragmatist.
You know what's funny? Like when people talk about the Shanahan offense, there's outside zone, but like really the defining trait is that it evolves. But for a while, you go back to 2019, 2018, 2017, 2020, like the defining characteristic besides outside zone was play action. It was Jared Goff and Jimmy Garoppolo boot action.
The
Rams would run. Yeah. Yep. The Rams would just run Jared Goff boot. And then I think it stopped in that year, 2021, where they phased out of it and things changed, right?
Well, Jimmy twisted his ankle, and so they couldn't get to the mesh point on that outside stretch, which is the same reason that Kirk Cousins isn't running it right now. He can't get to that point anymore. And so they started doing a pitch, but then also Mike McDaniel left. And now suddenly there's less of a impetus to figure out new ways to get to that outside zone. Also, I mean, listen, Purdy has a play in this. He grew up in a spread system, shotgun formation, and the Niners are doing it. But if you're going to be a full shotgun formation team, like commit to the bit and have receivers that can separate, like the Houston Texans.
Part of that, a little bit of its height, you know, in terms of like, you know, if you're throwing right at the line of scrimmage, it's a little harder for him to see than if he's shotgun and he can see how routes are developing right off the bat. I get that. But I do think there's an element of when the 49ers are at their most traditionally great in the run game, it was coming out of single back or even with juice in the backfield, but just under center, and you're using that very traditional stretch run. And you remember Raheem Mostert running for how many yards just off of those plays and then building boot action. And it's like, I know it's like the old traditional, and we're not saying like you should need to be running boot action every time, but the threat of it and that style and having to account for that, it changes how teams account for you. And it changes, you know, the way you can attack a defense.
On that point, you think about the other teams that run outside zone. So like New Orleans is a perfect example of this, right? They come out of the gates storming Kubiak. It's all happening. Derek Carr, election year. He's got those Trump rallies in his system. He's ready to rumble. And what did the Eagles do to stop it? They put six men on the line of scrimmage, and then Derek Carr is like, oh, I have to throw to get first downs? Like, I'm not going to do that. I can't do that. That's not my thing. The Niners should actively seek this. Like, has it felt at any point as if the Niners are in control of the give and take relationship between an offense and a defense this season? Outside of week one, I haven't felt that. And
no.
Forcing a defense to have to adjust to you is everything. And once you lose that upper hand, which Kyle Shanahan has maintained throughout his entire career, even with a scheme that goes back to when he was a teenager, even before then, right? Like, he's maintained that upper hand. It doesn't feel like he has the upper hand right now. And that's not to say he's a bad coordinator. It's just to say that maybe he has acquiesced a little too much. Now, I will point out one more thing here.
Yeah.
Deebo Samuel, we talked about this a little bit on Sunday night. Training camp was a total fucking lie. He looks slow. He looks less than spry. I mean, trying to think of all the.
I saw a couple routes where like it wasn't even he wasn't running.
I mean, let's even take it beyond that, because Deebo takes routes off. That's par for the course. When he has the ball in his hands, he doesn't look dangerous. That's very different. Right? Deebo's never separated from man, so they're not putting the ball in his hands all that often. Like, it does feel like Kyle has figured that part out, that, oh, actually, Deebo isn't the weapon he once was, so now I can't put him in the backfield the way that Dieter suggested and surely he thought of. Like, now I can't use him like Christian McCaffrey. You watch him on runs this year, it's been awful. It's anything but what we saw in 2021, which is to be expected. It's 3 years later. He plays like a crash test dummy. Of course he's lost a step. But when you don't now have that dynamic threat, either from McCaffrey or now I would argue without Deebo, which is again why they tried to trade him this past offseason. Now you're in a situation where you're again just calling plays and hoping they work. You're doing the Kellen Moore in a vacuum energy. You're not getting the upper hand in the chess match between offense and defense. You're just hoping that what you call works against what they call. And these other defenses have seen your shit a lot, and you are in your most basic form of your shit right now. It's not gonna pan out.
They are simultaneously like not dictating the terms, where I think Kyle at his best is he's got a very set first 10 or so plays.
Yeah, it's like 15. He can pare it down a little bit, but yeah.
Right. And it'll set up stuff later in the game, or sometimes even later in the season, where they're doing things just to see how a defense reacts. But you lose that luxury when you're not playing well. There's that. There is like a simplicity where just watching it back, there's like no clear, okay, in crosser, wide open because you put a safety in conflict. It felt like Gannon was dictating the terms with pretty garbage personnel. Great, not great. Really good safety and pretty good safety. And that was kind of all they needed.
But that was the threat that they had, right? Like, this is the only way that we can dictate terms. We're going to do this. And if they beat us, we have no counter. Whereas yeah. Kyle but is this, currently the one who has no counter.
And this all brings me back to my point that I made. Like, they desperately need Ricky Pearsall because they do not have separators. They, like, Debo is not winning. He's not providing, like you said, like the dynamic element of, like, you put the ball in his hands and anything right. can happen.
He's a strict wide granted, receiver right now. That's not good.
Granted, there's been a few plays where it's like he's going to break one and he doesn't get the block, but he's also not breaking tackles like the way you're like expecting him to break every tackle. Because that's
he has Debo's. One broken tackle this season. One.
That's insane. Because Debo's thing is like every year, like, oh, he cannot be tackled. Mm-hmm. And I do think he's going to be like a second half of the season player.
He better
be. I don't know. Because it's not looking right. And again, Juwan is like a great third down option. But when he's like, he's not really separating.
Never has. Like, never will. Not, he's got right, a 4.8 speed. That's not his thing.
He is a long physical receiver who gets just enough space where you can throw it to him and he's going to make the catch every time if he gets that little bit of space because mm-hmm. he's just that kind of guy. But the measurables, like, were there from the start. That's why he can't really separate. And when I say separate, I mean, like, I see a little bit of green grass between him and the guy covering him. Like, that third down, he separated, clearly. Like, snapped it off. And like I said.
But, Jake, that's in the slot on off-man coverage, and he is a very good route runner. So, like, if he was the player that he is now, but his speed was literally half a second faster, he'd be the best player in the league. Like, because he is able to separate at all is a modern miracle. Because the guys who typically separate aren't just, oh, pristine route runners. That matters. They're also physical freaks who can be faster than the player that they're guarding, who's typically having to move their hips in ways that are unnatural to the human body. Juwan Jennings should be treated, when we talk about a receiving threat, as a tight end. That is how he physically profiles. And yet the Niners put him up against nickelbacks, and he keeps winning because also physicality does matter in that spot. It's all to say that this is not a guy who can be the focal point of the offense. He's the best number three receiver probably in the league. But you're not putting him at X consistently. They didn't. You're not putting him at Z for sure, because that there's a whole bunch of stuff there. So he is a flanker, a wide receiver consistently. And in that spot, he's great. They're okay at receiving. I think you're spot on with the Pearsall thing. But the question is then who comes out? And I say at this point, it's Debo.
It is Debo. It is. And that's honestly what I said at the start of the season. I thought Pearsall's spot would be the Z. And they looked at that Chiefs tape and they said, okay, the number one thing that happened is we tried to feed the ball to Debo and he could not separate against mostly Trent McDuffie. And that, which, yeah, that's on Debo. It's also on them not adjusting and Kyle not directing attention elsewhere. I mean, granted, the Chiefs were great elsewhere, but like Ayuk was open and they didn't look his way a lot. I think Pearsall in that spot is the most logical thing. And then, especially on third downs, then you can put Debo in the backfield. That's your third down receiver.
Yes.
Like, I'm with you. You're telling me Debo can't run some of this? Like, Debo can run like a little choice route, keep it simple for him. Like, he's not the route runner McCaffrey is, but like, he can make catches in tight coverage, and you do have to account for him. And Mason can't, he's not a receiving running back at this point in his career. Like, you watch it. He's open a few times if that's on zone when no one's covering him. And man, like someone gets on him and it's over.
It's over.
And that's not me ripping him. He's an incredibly good running back, but like he's not a receiving back.
No.
And so when you have a situation where your running back doesn't separate, your Z receiver doesn't separate, and then the defense is sort of saying, all right, let's funnel attention everywhere else. We're going to help at least on Kittle or Ayuk with the safety over the top. You basically got like one viable option or a contested ball to Jennings. That's what's happening right now. And until you get Pearsall in the mix, somebody who can actually one
or Cowan.
Defenses won't really. Yeah, Cowan could help, but he's been hurt.
But Pearsall's a better option, unquestionably.
Right. Because defense is one, you don't have a lot of tape on him. It's going to take them time to pick up on him. But like he has the speed. He snaps off on routes. Mm-hmm. And again, like beating man coverage, it's something that's not going to happen every time. It's whether it's someone where you're like, can he beat this? Yes, I think he can. And he's going to really test cover corners in man coverage. Like, I know that. I've seen him do it in camp. Saw it on tape. He really runs routes very well. He snaps off. And he's got the athleticism and the length to, like, really get through it. If he can get back and be healthy, that's the sort of midseason. I hate the sort of, you know, when
is it a trade? Are they making
it's a trade? It's the Giants thing. The Giants do that all the time where they get somebody back that's hurt and they're like, basically, it's a trade. Yeah. Basically, we traded. And it's like, that's not how it works. But for the 49ers case, where I don't think they're going to trade for an offensive weapon, given what they have, it is Pearsall. And it is a little bleak that you need to ask him to come back and have a major impact. But that really is where they're at. And I think if he doesn't come back, he's not coming back this week. But then you got like 10 days to prepare for the Chiefs. I think if the 49ers get in a situation where they can beat Seattle in this game, that to me is a total toss-up, because Thursday nighters are total toss-ups.
100%.
I have truly almost no expectations. Like, it's just
You can look at it and go like, oh man, Seattle's so banged up on defense, and like Geno has been pretty meh, though I've kind of liked what I've seen from Geno. Like, I think Geno deserves more credit than he gets.
He played well.
Regardless, like, you know, Kenneth Walker is a question mark, and DK Metcalf has been good, but not so. There's a lot of question marks with the Seahawks, as per usual. You couldn't get me to place a bet on this game if you gave me the money.
No, not at all. I
every part of my logical brain says the Niners win by like 19. Like, every part of my logic, but then I'm just like, it's Thursday Night Football and it's the Seattle Seahawks. Logic has no quarter here.
Yeah, and it's like both teams are coming off losses, which the 49ers probably, like, not logically, but like vibe-wise, you kind of wish from their perspective that the Seahawks had won. Now they're both reeling a little bit. They just lost to the Giants. Like,
and they made Daniel Jones look like not just capable, but like kind of really fucking good.
And the Seahawks are a team where logic doesn't count, right? Like,
that's right. Yeah, no.
After a game,
it's the Bermuda Triangle of reason.
After a game like that, where it's like, all right, we can carve them up, it's probably going to be a really, really tough game. But the 49ers can get to even and have 10 days to ramp up Ricky Pearsall and still probably lose to the Chiefs, but then beat the Cowboys. And I don't know. We'll see. If they can get to 4-4 and have Pearsall have two games under his belt, have a bye, there's something there.
Totally.
But if they lose this game, and then,
if they lose this game, you have 10 days of horrendous energy. You have a fan base that they're done. Like, the fan base is so on the edge currently. They're coming up with like the conspiracy theories are getting heavy.
Yeah.
Like,
and
they're
way too much time on their hands.
Well, clearly, I mean, they're tweeting in the middle of the day and they don't operate on our schedule. So that's cool. Like, when you guys work in the night, like, I work a night shift, I get it, but like, come on now. This thing is on the edge. It's going to go over the cliff if they lose to the Seahawks, because now you're 0-3 in the division, and now you are,
and that's like your route, right? Because they're not, I still don't think they're like getting the one seed as much as they're favored to win the NFC. Well, they're not favored to get the one seed, they're favored to win the NFC, which is different.
And I think that that's also just holding on to priors, because they were such prohibitive favorites to win the NFC. I think they were just above even money to win the NFC.
Yeah.
And now they're plus 400. So it's been 5 weeks. Nothing is settled, but we're getting, you know, early returns have not been good. They've lost the first quarter and a little bit of the second quarter of this game. And that doesn't mean you can't win the game, but it does take the one seed out of play for all reason. If you just look at the schedule, that matters. I mean, that matters.
One other thing about Pearsall coming back, where before the Cardinals game, there were like rumblings. Lynch was sort of saying that like Pearsall could come back. I didn't listen to the full interview, but
this is on
from what I heard.
Yeah.
From what I heard, people were saying, like, you know, Ricky could come back. And then Shanahan goes, we're not bringing him back this week.
Yeah.
One, I think that's, you know, they didn't want to do a short week. They wanted to give him a full practice week to ramp up, and they'll get that before the Chiefs, an actual practice.
No doubt.
But there is, like, an element, a little galaxy brain, which I love to go galaxy brain.
Yeah, well, if we're going to be a conspiracy.
The Chiefs.
Yeah.
The Chiefs are the team that if you're the Niners and you say we're going to the Super Bowl, it's the Chiefs. Like, you plan everything around that.
Correct.
And that's why they drafted Pearsall, in my opinion. That's right. Because of the way the Chiefs beat them. And to not have any tape on Pearsall before going to face them, right. I think – I'm not saying that's all gamesmanship, because I think they would make the best decision if they felt like they could get Pearsall ready. But have that ramp up and then put Pearsall out there where you don't know how much he's going to be used and they don't have tape on him. There is, like, the slightest bit of, I'm like, Kyle thought about that.
This is all just Kyle Shanahan's effort. He's like, we're going to get every team to play man-to-man. And then the tape is going to be so convincing that every team is going to come out and play man-to-man for the rest of the season, because it's like, well, it worked for Arizona. It has to work for us. They suck.
Yeah,
and then Kansas City is going to come in with the exact same game plan because they invented it. And here's what's going to happen. We're going to hit him with Pearsall. And then Ricky is going to score 42 touchdowns this season. Like, there's galaxy brain. Then it's like, that's rope-a-dope.
Yeah, I don't think it's gone that far, but...
Who actually shot Ricky? Was this all part of the plan? I mean, okay. I will say that the fact of the matter is that the 49ers, to both you and I, are now reliant on a rookie who got shot. It just doesn't sound great,
It's...
You don't draw it up that way.
If you are... a team that is like a Super Bowl favorite, and that's sort of what you need to turn your season around. And that's all to say, like, I actually believe it could turn their season around. I believe Pearsall's that good, and that's the one thing this offense has been missing. And if you had added that, and if McCaffrey was out there and you'd added Pearsall to that, like, it'd be endless. But I don't know if McCaffrey's coming back. I do think Pearsall will be back after this Thursday game. Mm-hmm. We'll see. Maybe they wait until the bye. I think that would be stupid. But I also think
with the Pearsall thing, we can't. He's a professional athlete. This is a professional football team. But there is the mental element of all of this that we can't possibly do. The holdout might entirely be because of that. Like, they have not said that it's a strictly physical thing yet. Totally. And you don't mean... It's our job to get the answer, but also, like, we're not in a position to pry yet, because we don't know which way it is, one way or the other.
Right. And that's something that, like, to me, you leave that up to Ricky, to what he's comfortable talking about. I think,
yeah,
like, you, like, that's something that I wish no one to go through. And you're right. We don't know what he's gone through. We have no idea what that's like at all. So for that to be a factor, completely. Like, I won't speculate on any of that. But if that's why, that makes total sense. Because that is not something that you can have put a timeline on or have any idea. Mm-hmm. So if that's part of it, and to say, all right, just check in with him, see when he's ready. When he's ready, he's ready. And let him go.
But at a certain point when there's pressure on him to play, if not internally, then certainly externally. And obviously we set the agenda for all things 49ers here. When there's, like, pressure on him to play, or it feels like, oh, we need him, like, now we're getting into territory that we're in no way qualified to talk about. But, like, that's a worry for me on a human level, that, like,
he might
not be ready to play and forcing him into it. I don't think that's happened yet. I think that they're going to give deference to this. I think that that's a smart thing to do. Somewhat unprecedented territory. That said, if we want to go galaxy brain, coming out in that Kansas City game to many men by 50 Cent would be pretty cool. Just throwing that out there.
It would be. It's also like that when they have had these, like, rough starts to the season, there's always been, like, one game or one, like, jolt that, like, as much as players and Debo, coaches and whoever,
McCaffrey and Purdy simultaneously, more or less,
right? Like, and as much as you like to be like, well, it's about how we practice, how we play. And some people like don't believe in momentum, and, you know, some players will be like, it's just about the work we put in. There's always like a vibe thing that flips for them where when you think it's over, they get one win in a pretty special way with like a signature moment from somebody. And that juice that is gone is like suddenly back. And then this team, which has all the talent in the world, is like, all right, we're actually going to do this. And that's the sort of thing, like, it doesn't matter what Ricky would do. Like, him coming back for them is going to be such a monumental boost just to see him on the football field again.
Spiritually.
That matters. That matters.
It does. That's very collegiate, though, where, you know, but it is. You're spot on with it. We've already said that no one feels comfortable making a prediction on this game on Thursday, but do you have any thoughts leading into it that you want to get off your chest, or any flags you want to plant so that you can look smart or really stupid come Friday?
I wonder if in hindsight we'll look at the Cardinals game and be like, Purdy's brain was broken by the heat and he didn't process very well because of that, when he's a guy that relies on that. And I'm not excusing him. He was bad. Yeah. I said that last time, and the tape is like, he wasn't quick enough and he was bailing too quickly, and that sack killed him. But I think this will be interesting. I think this is a game, last time he went up to Seattle, he had the broken rib. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that can provide him like some juice of being like, all right, I'll go back up there. I don't have a broken rib, or not a broken.
Yeah, that was his first go around. Yeah, he broke his
rib. They said it was an oblique and it was a broken rib.
Yeah, Kyle let that leak the other day. That was fun. These guys love to lie.
Listen, I think this is, you know, to go to like the old school media school, the way like people love to break down games. This is setting up for a bounce back game for Brock Purdy.
Yeah, real put up and shut up energy.
I do think this will be a chaotic, entertaining game. And my gut, despite, again, previously saying that I think this thing's a total toss-up just because it's a Thursday night game and anything goes and both these teams are kind of a mess, my gut does say that the 49ers will win. Devin Witherspoon, though, keep an eye on him. That guy is a menace to society. Mm-hmm. And there's a chance they just say, all right, we'll put him on Ayuk and we'll let everyone else figure it out. And, you know, we'll help with our safeties on Kittle and follow the same game plan. Mike McDonald sure gave them hell when they faced the Ravens.
That's where my head's at.
So
I don't know if I know Mike McDonald doesn't have the personnel to replicate last year's performance on Christmas Day. But much like with the Cardinals, they didn't have the personnel either. And they were still able to make Brock Purdy's life really difficult because the offensive line.
I like the Seahaws personnel much more than I like the Cardinals.
Yeah, their defense. I almost like the Cardinals defensive line more with Bilal, and there's some,
because they're just big boys against
it. Yeah, and they could go three down, and so, you know, you're okay.
That is something that like I did want to mention briefly. Like when the Niners, when you look at a defensive line, and I think this is something that's a note for me more than anything. Mm-hmm. Like, when you look at defensive lines, I think the Niners are okay with guys that are pretty talented, but like when they get physical, large guys, especially like three down, stacking fronts in the middle, that's a problem for them, especially when they run games and you got a big boy looping around and you got to account for him. Like Purdy on that one where he probably should have stepped right and thrown to Juwan left in the red zone. I think it was their first one, and he had a split second to make it, and it was tough. But what happened is you had a guy crashing right between Banks and Trent. And so Purdy went, okay, I'm trying to get to the left, let me roll left. And then the throw is gone. Like, when you get big, beefy defensive linemen, I worry about that against the 49ers interior offensive line.
I'm with you. I mean, Brendel's out there. Like, it's been better, but we're starting from zero. Pooney still has issues moving, and there's some confusion there. We know what McKivitz can and can't do. And then Banks is some weeks on and some weeks off. Now, luckily, Trent's rounded into form. But, yeah, they've had problems with problems with three-man fronts for a minute now. And it'll just be really interesting to see what Seattle does schematically, because they got nothing to lose on the defense.
And who they have available, because their whole defensive line's been hurt.
So
they just put a guy on, they just put Nwosu on IR. So
I'm very curious to see if they rip off, or I guess it's hard to say where the genesis was, but if they go and they look at the Minnesota tape and they say, we're going to do that, which is the triangles, the conjoined triangles of success, and just let Witherspoon make a call on palms or quarters.
Yep.
And try to get a couple interceptions. I would guess that's what they do. A lot more difficult when you don't have Van Ginkle and some really good defensive linemen like the Vikings have. But they could try that, or they could try to do exactly what Jonathan Gannon just did, which is, hey, we're just going to do our best, and we're going to keep our safeties in good position. And if we give up big chunk plays, we give up big chunk plays, and we'll chalk it up to Thursday Night Football. But basically, we'll let IU get as much as he wants, but we can't let Debo win. We can't let Jennings win. We can't let Kittle win.
It's also like keep your safeties up high and dare the 49ers to beat you in the red zone where they
100% cannot. It's by the way, this is the model that teams have used against Kansas City now, right? Where they don't have a receiver that can win in man. They just have Rashee Rice, who runs the same goddamn drag route every time before his knee exploded. And they have Kelce, who's the best zone beater on the planet and pretty good in man, but the best zone beater that's probably ever existed. And so teams just leave too high, and they dare Patrick Mahomes, and they're now daring Brock Purdy to just take what's given. But when what's given is really only tight window throws underneath, or hopefully Brandon.
Yeah.
You want to take the big one with Ayuk because you can get 40 yards. But what you need to be doing with the one guy who can beat guys in man to man is take six every time. Brock is not of that mindset right now. And this is where I think the play action comes into play big time. And I wish the Niners would get back to that. I do think it'd be helpful.
I will say, I feel like there's a tendency in the red zone, like Ayuk's routes, like the whip route he's so good on, it doesn't feel like he's the first read when he runs those. There's been a couple times I've seen him win on those. Like the Patriots, he beat Christian Gonzalez on a whip route, and his side wasn't the first look. And I think that should fundamentally change, specifically with that route, and also, like, I don't know, run a rug and get him underneath.
I mean, but this is, again, we'll come back to something I've said time and time again. Brock never had to look at the X. He never had to look at the X in preseason. When they installed this offense, which is a different offense than they had last year. I mean, just it's minute, but it is different. When they installed this offense, the full Purdy offense for the first time, they didn't have Brandon Ayuk. So they weren't looking at the X. And I'm not sure where the read should or shouldn't be. I don't have the playbook in front of me. Anyone wants to shoot it my way, I'll take PDFs, emobies, all these stuffs. I'll take whatever you can give me. I don't have the playbook in front of me. I don't know where the first read should be. I'm not sitting in the quarterback's meetings with Greasy and stuff.
Right.
I can say when you don't have an X receiver that wins like ever in the preseason and in training camp, you don't have the muscle memory of, hey, okay, we ran over this 10 times in camp.
Yeah.
Maybe we went over twice in the regular season. You don't have the muscle memory of, oh, Brandon's going to be open. You just don't look left. He's not an ampy turner. Shout out Derek Zoolander. Like it's a mess, and it can all look fine come Friday morning. It really could.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, to close, I think this thing's a toss up, but my gut feeling is that the 49ers, they need this so much more than Seattle does.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think the game you win, and it's like, all right, we can reset. We got like a mini bye here. Like, maybe we get Ricky back. Maybe they don't.
Yeah.
I don't know. I won't. Again, I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
But they can get back on track if they win this game.
Look at who they go to in this game. It will be somebody's game, right? Last week was Ayuk. You know, it'll be somebody's game. Whomever they go to is their man for the rest of the season. I think it'll be Ayuk. We'll find out. All right.
I think it will be too, and I think they'll look Kittle's way. But
that's a good call too. All right. Adios, everybody.
Peace.